Step 20 is action through non-action. It rides hand in hand with step 19, power comes from within. But there are certain aspects and sophistications to this that I ought to deal with that are important. The idea from the Tao, called Wu Wei, is the idea that there is a natural flow in nature and in life, and that by aligning to that flow and disengaging the mind, one allows things to rest inside a natural simplicity and to effortlessly unfold in the space of time. Let me read you a few lines from the Tao. Perfect activity leaves no track behind it. Perfect speech is like a jade worker whose tool leaves no mark. The perfect door has neither bolt nor bar, yet it cannot be opened. Taking the idea of non-action, you can see in Taoist paintings very few brushstrokes, simple lines, diffused lights, pastel colors. You see Wu Wei in the art and the simplicity of the pottery, in the effortless grace and gentle tranquility that is the hallmark of Taoist creativity. Originally, Wu Wei was taken to mean sitting in a monastery and meditating for 30 years or whatever. It was said that by doing nothing, you could gain everything. However, in our modern times, this sitting forever doesn't really work. What we can see through this idea of action through non-action is that because the initiate is dedicated, that allows him or her power. Non-action is being outside the emotional molecule of your people, that collective emotion. It's outside the desires and frustrations that most people go through. It's the lightness of touch that comes from confidence, grace, and a settled heart. So, for example, as I was saying before, if you want to sell something and you push it upon people, buy this, buy that, that is action. By pulling back and subjugating your ego, your needs, for the customer's emotional wants, that is non-action. If you're a salesperson or if you handle a sales force, you're going to want to tattoo this idea of subjugating the ego on your staff's forehead and on your own forehead. If you teach your salespeople to learn to get underneath their customers, they will improve their performance dramatically. They have to subjugate their ego long enough to sell whatever it is that they're selling. A salesperson that goes into a shop and starts talking about himself, is all over everybody, is rah-rahing and pushing, that naturally causes people to defend. What's this guy after, they ask. They become protective. If you can teach a salesperson to get psychologically under the customer, to keep quiet, to let the customer talk, ask questions. Who is the customer? She's a buyer, but first and foremost, she's a woman, a mother perhaps, a parachutist, a rock climber. Find out, what does she want? What does she need? What are her considerations? Be there for people. By getting underneath, you sell them. By pulling them into the deal rather than shoving the deal upon them. Why? Because you're supporting them. When someone gives you their money, they are letting go of a small part of their security. Paying out at a deeply subliminal level actually takes them closer to financial collapse and an ego death. If I pay out this money, will I have less? Will I be able to eat? If I don't eat, I'll die, and so on. People have to be secure to transfer their funds to you. Never forget that. How you make them secure is to not come at them from above, telling them how marvelous the product is or how marvelous you are. Instead, work on their comfort zone. Tell them that everything is cozy, safe, and secure. Work on their positive energy. Tell them about the good fortune that is about to descend upon them in these exciting and positive times. Then, and only then, mention your product. So non-action is really the act of watching the ebb and flow of events and getting underneath life. It's really weird because in the previous session, I was talking to you about being bigger than life. Being bigger than life is an inner feeling. Now, intellectually, you're going to put yourself underneath life. You're going to humble yourself, in the ego's terminology, and subjugate yourself to the needs of others, like your clients, before yours. Just long enough to make sure that they're okay and that you take the order. Being detached, you can see inside people's humanity and you'll soon understand what they want. Here's another example of non-action. If your body's sick, rather than being in the emotion of it, running around in a frenzy, taking tablets, calling the doctor, if you step back and understand that you're eternal, that the real you cannot be sick, you're in Wu Wei. You're in the non-action of centering yourself first and thinking through and feeling through what is your best move. What do you really need to adjust to your former balance, to your former health? Most disease comes from stress, and a lot of disease is an external manifestation of an inner disquiet. So by pulling back and going within, you can start to come to the emotional reason for the disease. And then also, you've got to remember that some disease is good because it shows you what you're doing wrong and gives you a chance to pull back and adjust your actions. So, if you're not well, rather than panicking, go quiet and listen to what the inner you is saying. Listen to the healing it's offering you. Now, think of this. You are always in the right place at the right time. And each thing that comes along can be perceived in that light. If you're balanced, you will move into a probability pattern that precludes pain and injury, because that is a manifestation of imbalance. To some, life seems like a type of roulette, where people wander about and some get hurt and some don't, and some get killed and some don't, and some get sick and some don't. But that comes from an externalization of people's feeling. They feel that they're in a crapshoot. Once your feelings are healed, there's no more Russian roulette. Once you have accepted responsibility for your life, what you have to do is understand that if things are imbalanced, go within and examine the deep inner reasons why. Rushing around trying to fix the dam after it floods doesn't really work. It involves you burning a lot of energy. The source is where you should be. There you can fix everything. Gradually, your external reality will manifest itself according to your new inner patterns. So, Wu Wei is understanding that you don't have to push. When people rush forward, you step back. When they run, you walk. When they cry out and call for attention, you remain still. If you don't desperately want things, no one can move you. You have all the time in the world. Say that to yourself several times a day like a mantra. I am balanced. I have all the time in the world. I have all the time in the world. It's hard to comprehend at first that the external world that you're looking at is actually a manifestation of your inner dream. But once you comprehend that, it saves you an awful lot of struggle and rushing about. Another example I could offer you is when you're dealing with a friend and they're very difficult. You want them to change their mind and, say, support a project that you have. Action would be trying to convince them, standing over them and beating them around with intellectual argument, talking about the good qualities of this project, perhaps manipulating them emotionally by saying, if you were a good person, you would help me and you would be involved and so on, dragging them in saying, you owe it to me or whatever. The non-action is literally standing inside their mind and finding out, what is this person actually saying to me? What is their position? What is their attitude? If they want support, ask yourself, why won't they support? What do they need? Who are they? You know, where are they at this point in life? What is their agenda? So non-action is putting yourself aside and even putting aside your need to have them support your project, say, and momently stepping inside them to discover who they are. Next, you see quite clearly that they're afraid or they're too little to give of themselves. And so you don't waste your energy trying to persuade them. If you need help, it'll show up. If it doesn't, you can either manage on your own, or now is not the time to engage yourself in the particular project. Bag it. You see, everybody wants something. I know that sounds awful, because we like to think of a world where people don't want things. But in fact, everybody wants something. It's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just the way things are. The ones to watch are the ones who say, I don't want anything. Because when they say that, it usually means that they do want something, but their agenda is subtle and hidden. If they really didn't want anything, they wouldn't need to say so, would they? Usually what people want is recognition, respect. They want to be built up, more energy. They want to feel more secure. They want you to endorse them. They're basically out there avoiding death. And that's what the ego is doing most of the time. Not necessarily physical death, but death of a rhythm, death of an idea, death of something that you're used to. So give people what they want. If they want you to endorse them, do so. If they need to feel secure, support them. Supply their ego's needs, and they will come to you effortlessly. And when they show up, figure out something to sell them and bill them. So non-action is a different way of looking at things. It's saying, first I'll go within. Rather than building a stockade to protect myself, I'll go within and feel secure. If you resonate solidity, you won't need the stockade. When people say, we're building a stockade, the Mongols are coming, why don't you help us? You can say, I don't need a stockade, because the day that the Mongols come, I won't be here. But I'll be happy to help you with your stockade if you like. But please don't take it personally if I leave a few days before it's finished, if that's okay with you. Why is this attitude possible? Because the advancing energy of the Mongol army, as it starts to come down upon your village, you'll feel it months away. You'll say to yourself, my subtle feelings feel odd today. I can feel 60,000 Mongols in the near vicinity. It's time to visit my friend George in Bujumbura. And off you go. So, pushing and not pushing, action and non-action, psychology and reverse psychology, and of course silence, the sacredness of your life. That's how you create non-action. Let's go to step 21, which is dedicating your life to the sacred way. Once you accept the infinity within you, life becomes sacred. In the world of the ego, nothing in particular is sacred. So respecting your life, respecting all living things, and beginning to act in a sacred way, your actions become an affirmation of your intention, an affirmation of your dedication to your infinite self. So it's important for you to develop a sacred way. And that may involve religious ritual or sacred rituals or rituals that are meaningful to you. Okay, how do you make a thing sacred? You make a thing sacred by basically saying, this is sacred. So if you take some ancient religious relic, like you've got St. Matilda's toenails in a box or something, if everyone in the congregation considers St. Matilda's toenails to be sacred, they become sacred. Because people agree that these toenails in this little box that came from the 12th century are sacred. That's the only way you can make things sacred, is to concentrate upon them and invest them in a special kind of energy, a special kind of awe. So to make your life sacred, you only have to look in the bathroom mirror and say, this is sacred. Try not to laugh. This is sacred. Then start acting in a sacred way. Act deliberately. Act with intention. You're guarding your energy. You're not trashing it. Be zen. Be ordered. You can have rituals and ceremonies that you do each day as part of your discipline. The discipline of rising early is a sacred discipline. The discipline of prayer, the discipline of silence, the discipline of looking after yourself. Concentration, remember, is love. When you concentrate upon something, you are loving it. If you want to create a sacred path for yourself, start to act in a sacred way. A lot of my philosophy has been influenced by the Native American tradition. I particularly like the fact that the Native Americans are close to Taoists, and like the Taoists, they revere nature. So when I go to my spiritual home in Taos, New Mexico, I gather with my friends, and they're all from different races and walks of life. They're not necessarily Native Americans, some are, most aren't. But we gather, and we perform ceremonies together. We perform talking stick, which is a Native American ceremony that takes place round a fire. Or we perform sweat lodges for healing, prayer, and meditation. Or we get together at 3 o'clock in the morning and we have a special meditation or a special process that we perform at night in the mountains. We're not a religious order or an ashram. We're just ordinary people. One guy works in a publishing company, one lady's a mother, one guy's a lecturer, which is me, one guy works at the local garage or whatever. But we're just ordinary people, but we gather together and act out our respect for each other, our planet, our evolution, and we act it out in a sacred way. I like to create that sense of sacredness with me wherever I go. Little things. I don't overdo it. For example, if I'm in a hotel, I pull out a flag from my bag which has a sacred symbol on it, and I pin it up in the hotel room. I might put out a little candle and place the candle beside the flag. Before I go out to my morning's business, I stop and I kneel before the flag and say some sacred things, just a word or two. Maybe I have an intention that day to deliver a product or a lecture or go to a meeting, visit with the bank manager perhaps. So I review it in my mind and I see things going well. And what I'm saying is, I'm in the ego's world, doing ego things, like earning a living and meeting with the bank manager. But these mundane acts are sacred to me because I'm concentrating upon them. So seeing your life as sacred is really no more than developing that attitude and having some small place that's special that you can call your own. It can be a small room in a house, or even part of a small room is enough. But in that room or in that place, you put your holy objects, the Bible, the Tao, or something that's been written that you feel has value. You make it like an altar to the inner self, and then you act that sacredness out during the day by seeing the inner self as sacred and seeing your life as sacred, honoring it and respecting it, and of course, seeing the planet as sacred. And from that sacredness comes even more humility, which I've already talked about, and a natural sense of gratitude. You have to take time to be grateful. Gratitude is not only a beautiful and humble thing, but it is a part of that affirmation that says, I'm in control, I'm eternal, I'm not in a rush. This is a beautiful journey With all its ups and downs, it is still beautiful, and I'm grateful. In aligning to the sacred way, you embrace the infinite self. Develop sacredness in everything you do. That means concentrate on the things you do. Washing the car can become sacred if you make washing the car into a prayer. If you just roll out with some soap and water, washing the car can be a drag. But if you make it sacred, here's the bucket, here's the brush, here are the soap suds, here are the rags, and they're all lined up in little rows. And you pause for a moment to notice the way you've laid everything out. And there's the car. And you concentrate and you infuse this car washing session with a sense of sacredness. This is how I'm experiencing or expressing my humanity for the next 20 minutes. So washing the car becomes a sacred prayer where you acknowledge and accept yourself and the God force and the beauty of this human journey. So, turn your life from mundane and meaningless into sacred and special, and accept the sacred way as a part of your life. Step 22 is understanding that inspiration and creativity come from within. As a part of the journey on Earth, you're going to handle your survival stuff. You have to cook the food, wash your body, pay the mortgage, so on. But beyond all of that, and beyond your involvement with your friends and family and your responsibilities and whatever, the one purpose for you in this lifetime is for you to express and create. The hardest thing in the world to do is to think things up, to think up of a new idea, to think up a poem, to think up a painting, to compose a song. But when you get deep inside of you, you touch into the total creativity that there's ever been. I think in neuro-linguistic programming, they call it modeling, where you think about or notice what successful people do, and then you do the same thing. That, in the external sense, would be modeling. I suppose it's a good idea, except there is a danger that you wind up as boring as everybody else. In my lectures, I sometimes ask people to think of an idea that's never been thought of before. There's a long silence. Try it. It's quite hard. But the infinite self is ram-jam full of stuff that no one's thought of before. Also, all the energy of the very greatest creators of the past and present is still there. It hasn't disappeared. The creative splendor of this earth plane is infinite. It doesn't waste away. So whereas Mozart is now dead and buried, the inspiration that was Mozart is still alive. So if you're into classical music, you can pull upon the memory of Mozart and use that inspiration to improve your music and make it more original. All of Mozart's compositions, his memory, is still in the collective unconscious, which is infinite and eternal. It's in the perpetual global memory of our people, and you can call upon it and tap it. Just ask. Once you understand that creativity is infinite, you can see that creativity is putting the ego to one side and allowing subtle ideas and feelings to flow from within, to hear the song in your feelings, to feel and see the painting before it's finished, to see this thing that you're carving finished and complete and pull it out from within you. You know when you see paintings in a modern gallery, they're very intellectual, aren't they? They're often quite busy and neurotic, and you look at them and they don't necessarily please you. Often they repulse you. Then you see a simple painting of a child sitting in the dirt on a railway track, and it's very beautiful because you can see the simplicity, the pathos. You can see the emotion, you can see the feeling. In the end, your mission in this life is to create and express yourself. Creativity is not necessarily painting, music, art, or books. It can be carpentry, bricklaying, nurturing children, education, healing, whatever. But you're here to create. The best way to create is to discipline yourself. You need order and silence, and you have to be in touch with your subtle feelings. Then the creativity comes up from within. Most of what people create is fairly boring, isn't it? So they think it through and they say, well, this guy painted the tree green and to the left, so I'll paint it greeny-brown and put it on the right. And people look at it and think, there's a greeny-brown tree on the right. Yawn, yawn. Real creativity is an inner thing. Go past your resistance. Go past the natural laziness of the mind and get settled and get ready. And it's amazing how prolific and original you can become. The mind will slow you down. It will have excuses. It will want you to be disorganized. But your feelings, your infinity, is ordered. And it's all there, completed and ready. All you've got to do is pull it out. It flows endlessly. It's original. So put your thinking aside and call upon your subtle feelings to show you an originality, a new idea, or even an old idea that you express in a new and refreshing way. If you want to create, get the tools around you that you need. Lay out your paintbrushes. Get them in order. Lay them in a sacred way. Bless them if you like. Give thanks for your paintbrushes. Give thanks for color. Give thanks for your sight that shows you the reds and the greens and the blues. Put your paintbrushes in a special place. If you say, I'm going to paint at 8 o'clock because my word is law, then go and sit and settle and center within and feel the painting complete and finished. Up from your feelings will come a painting that is unusual, strange, different, and complete. All you've got to do is rub the brush on the canvas a few times, and there it is. People will love to buy it, or it'll just give them pleasure, because it's different. So creativity is awkward. It's uncomfortable. Rollo May wrote a great book called The Courage to Create, in which he said that you have to go beyond your natural inhibition. Let's face it, the personality has normal inhibitions about creativity because the personality hates to be evaluated. So the personality wants to paint something complicated and have everybody adore it, praise it. The personality is keen on things like its expression. You know, this is my art. This is my statement. I'm not going to change for anybody. I'm going to do my slightly green tree over there on the right. This is me, and everybody has to stand up and salute. There are loads of writers, artists, painters, and creators that, in my view, are full of it. When you listen to that stuff about my art, my poetry, my film, it always makes you want to throw up because it's so ridiculous. All creativity comes from the God force. You can't own it. It belongs to everybody. So my art, my film, it's just pompous. The fact is, when you get inside yourself, you won't be inhibited anymore. You won't feel like my art, my statue. You'll just want to create. People are going to like it or they're not going to like it. But if you have to sell your creativity, then you might have to adjust. There's loads of artists out there suffering from an eating disorder called too much ego, too little God force. Sometimes you have to adjust if you want to eat. So creativity will depend very much on, do you have to sell your creativity or can you just create for the pleasure of creating? If you have to sell it, adjust it to what the market wants. I have certainly found that I've had to do that over the years, because if I really wrote the books that I wanted to write that were deep inside of me, people wouldn't understand them. So I've had to adjust my books by putting them into a language that people can comprehend. And that's just a matter of merchandising. One day, when I've got some time, I'll write some books that tell the story of these inner perceptions, these inner worlds. And if people don't understand them, it won't matter, because they'll have all the other books to read in the meantime. That's just one of the compromises I've decided to make. Anyway, creativity is one of the main reasons for being on the earth plane. Think in terms of what will I create, and start making yourself create things. Take time out to create something. It doesn't matter if nobody will ever see it. Just practice expressing yourself. Because when you create, sooner or later, it's going to be very likely that you're going to have something brand new and fresh and different to sell. You've painted something, you've carved something, you've written a program on a computer, you've created some music. There it is. Creativity is money in the bank. You can become prolifically creative once you get the mind out of the way. So get organized, be creative, silence the mind, and realize that as you create, you're inside an eternal prayer. Feel out what it is you want to do, see it complete, and then express it in the external world where people can admire it or buy it. Be courageous. Try it out. It doesn't matter if you have to do 10, 15, 20 paintings that are absolutely ghastly and you trash the lot. Just as long as you create, and eventually you'll create one that's beautiful that you can keep or sell. So creativity is a discipline, and it's a marvelous way of expressing yourself and the God force within you. Seek it out. Try things out. Don't be scared. You know, practice, train, go on courses if needs be, and move yourself towards some kind of creative expression. You'll be amazed what you can do. Step 23 is always maintain freshness. Watch nature and align to nature. As you exist in the circumstances that you find yourself in the energy pattern that you are today, you have to constantly pump energy to sustain the situation. When you feel bored and fed up and stuck, what it means is you've used up the energy of the place where you find yourself. You know when you go into a new neighborhood and it's really exciting and really beautiful and there's a really cool cafe on the corner and the people are neat and there's a Jamaican band playing in the bar on Saturday night and you're really excited. But then after a while, it starts to lose its energy. You go into the bar where the band was and there's a cockroach walking across the wall and the little cafe isn't so cool and the people aren't really neat anymore. This is because you can use energy up. If you're just tick-tocking along at that sort of slug-in-a-puddle energy, you can stay in a place forever and ever. It doesn't really make any difference. But if your energy's alive, you're going to use up people. You're going to use up places. You're going to use up philosophies, diets, disciplines. You're going to change cars, change clothes. Keep staying fresh. And when you see the energy around you dying and stagnating, move, change, or enliven it in some way. Paint it a different color. Move to a new neighborhood. Act differently. Watch nature, because nature's your teacher. It moves and flows and moves again. There's an incredible beauty out there, and it's there to teach you. its silence, its beauty, its humility. Stay aligned to that. Stay aligned to the ebb and flow. Stay aligned to the seasons and understand that winter is not the time for starting a new project. Winter is the time to turn inwards, to think, create, and get ready. Now the spring is coming. Now you can pull energy from the flowers, the rushing streams, the buds that come out. Now is the time to start a new project, the springtime. Move and put your energy into the spring. And now comes the summer, which is the time for the harvest. It's the time to collect the bills that are unpaid, to sign the contracts, to complete the stuff you began in the spring. And then on to the fall. When it comes to the time of the autumn or the fall, take time to think in terms of, hey, what kind of crud did I collect this year? What needs to fall away? And so as you watch the leaves fall, feel that same process going on inside your heart. Yeah, I can release these things. I don't need to hold on to that. This stuff is finished with. This stuff is stagnant. These relationships are over. The things you finish with, pass them on to someone else. Some of the things may be valuable and you may want to sell them. If not, just give them away. Everything's on rental from the God Force, and you can give it to somebody else. Say, here, I finished with this coat, you have it. So by watching nature and aligning to nature, you can align to that infinity within you. Nature doesn't have a concept of death. That is why the world of the animals is so pristine and beautiful. An animal can experience momentary fear as it gets itself into a situation in which it is vulnerable, but the cow in the field isn't sitting there thinking about its insurance policy, thinking about dying. The cow is just being. It is. It's alive. It's munching grass. It's walking around. It's standing under a shady tree. That's the eternity of the cow. And that is the eternity of the raven. The eternity of the little crawly things on the earth. They are free of ego, so they don't have a concept of dying. Therefore, they're free of agony. From nature, we learn serenity. We learn security. We learn stability. As you stay aligned to nature as much as possible, you learn from it. You may want to try the discipline that I tried, which was rising at 4 a.m. every morning and walking in silence in the forest. If you don't have time to do that for 3 years and you don't fancy it, do it for a week. But by noticing and staying with the natural rhythms of this plane, the sunrise and the sunset, if you're up before dawn, you're ready. You're in a quiet energy. The rest of the world isn't up. Their ego and their mind haven't polluted the psychic atmosphere around you. You're ready for the day. I'm eternal, immortal. Here comes the sun. I'm ready. And as you watch and learn, you constantly police your energy. You see what is fresh. You see what needs changing, what needs to be reinvigorated. You can see if a friendship starts to fall apart. And you'll know that it's probably because you haven't put any energy into it. So call that person, invite them out, meet them for coffee. Put energy into the places where it's getting sluggish. Anything you finish with, release it and let it go. There's a little rule that a friend of mine who's a teacher lives by. And her rule is that anything that you haven't used or handled in the last 6 months that you're not going to use immediately in the next few weeks, get rid of it. Give it away. What the rule says is you will only surround yourself with things that are alive with energy, that you touch and animate and maintain, things that you're using. Everything else, you're going to liberate yourself of the weight of it. It's quite a nice little rule. This way you remain simple. You stay with nature. Look at the birds. They don't carry anything around. They don't have garages full of stuff. They're simple, and they know. They wake up in the morning, and they're not thinking, how am I going to make it today? They just fly around and peck. A peck here and a peck there. Everything's provided for them. Understand there's an enormous abundance everywhere. Keep your life uncluttered and simple, and that abundance flows to you. It's an uncomplicated process. Constantly move away from clutter towards simplicity, and it's there that you will experience the infinite self. Come with me to the next session, and I'll show you some concepts that will liberate you from 90% of the anguish in this world. Thank you.